Okay, so are you ready to go on a little adventure with me today?
Always up for an adventure.
All right, excellent. The Church of Tinkerbell podcast.
Faith, imagination, the power of belief.
Love and acceptance to make the world a better place.
What would happen if we all just tried to see the world through the eyes of a child again, even for a moment?
It's a beautiful thought, isn't it?
It is.
The Church of Tinkerbell.
The Church of Tinkerbell. All right, I'm intrigued.
Okay, you can feel it in the air, can't you? The shadows are getting longer, maybe the floorboards creak a bit louder.
Uh-huh. It's definitely that time of year. Fear feels like it has teeth again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's the perfect season, we thought, to look at the difference between, you know, the fear that makes you run for the hills and the fear you actually, well, pay for.
Right. The fear we choose.
That's our mission today. We're digging into a really interesting source, a recent piece from the Church of Tinkerbell.
Yes. Always fascinating stuff from them.
For anyone maybe less familiar, their whole thing is exploring life's big questions, but through this lens of radical kindness, whimsy, glitter even. Love, laugh, question, right?
Absolutely. They don't shy away from the deep end, even if it's coated in glitter. They know you need the whole spectrum.
And this piece is part of their Halloween series, looking at what they call the gift of chosen fear. The idea that maybe seeking out fright can actually lead us somewhere.
Yeah.
Profound.
It sounds counterintuitive, doesn't it? A gift. But yeah, that's the premise. How facing fear, when it's on our terms, can help us live more deeply.
Okay, so let's unpack that. How can something deliberately scary, something that makes us jump or, you know, scream, be a gift? What exactly are we talking about when we say chosen fear?
Okay, so let's define it first. Chosen fear is basically when we actively seek out experiences that trigger our fear response, but crucially, in a context we know is safe.
Like haunted houses.
Haunted houses, definitely. Roller coasters, watching a really effective horror movie, maybe even telling ghost stories around a campfire, you're opting in.
Right. And we all get why we avoid real fear. It's baked in, keeps us safe.
Mm.
But what happens chemically, physically, when we choose the fake kind? What's that rush?
Well, here's the fascinating part. Your body, it doesn't really make a huge distinction initially, whether it's a guy in a rubber mask jumping out or, you know, an actual threat.
Seriously, the same reaction.
Pretty much the same initial biological cascade, yeah. Adrenaline floods your system. Cortisol levels spike. Your heart starts pounding. Senses sharpen right up. You are instantly, physiologically ready to flee or fight.
Wow. Okay, that sounds intense and kind of draining.
It is intense. Pure, undiluted focus. But here's the absolute key difference, and this is where the chosen part matters so much. It's happening within what the source calls a safe container.
A safe container, meaning?
Meaning you're borrowing all that biological intensity, that primal survival wiring, but your thinking brain, your cognitive self, knows you're actually safe. You're on a theme park ride or in a cinema seat. There's an escape route. The threat isn't real world dire.
Gotcha. So you get the physical fireworks, the full feeling of being under threat, but you still kind of know deep down, I'm okay.
Exactly. You retain that cognitive override. And the source points out the immediate effect of this is pretty remarkable. It creates a state of pure sensation.
Pure sensation. What does that feel like?
Well, think about normal life, right? We're constantly juggling things. Emails pinging, mental to-do lists scrolling, worrying about errands. We're always partially distracted.
Yeah, our attention is split like a million ways.
Totally. We're almost never fully present. But when that jump scare hits or the roller coaster drops, bang!
Yeah.
Your body's alarm system demands 100% of your attention right now.
You can't think about your shopping list then.
No way! Dang. Every bit of mental energy is focused on the immediate perceived threat. It's like mandatory mindfulness, almost. You are slammed right into the present moment.
Whether you want it to be or not.
Precisely. And that is the immediate gift, according to the source. It's a temporary but total break from all that mental clutter and worry.
And then afterwards, when the scare is over,
that flood of relief, the laughter, maybe even tears, it's not just happiness, it's the physical release of having been intensely, purely alive for a moment, fully engaged, and then the satisfaction of, well, surviving it without any actual harm.
That makes sense, that feeling of just being totally present. And this actually ties really well into the story they share, doesn't it? The one about Leela and the haunted door.
Oh yeah, that anecdote is a perfect illustration of moving from that raw physical fear to, well, something else, an insight.
So set the scene. We have this classic setup. creepy house on the edge of town, looks kind of crooked, everyone whispers about it. Total keep away vibes.
Mm-hmm. The archetypal haunted house.
And then there's Leela. The source makes a point of saying she wasn't necessarily brave, but she was curious. That curiosity is what pulls her towards this big, imposing, dark front door.
And that's a really important distinction, isn't it? Curiosity versus bravery. Bravery sometimes suggests you're not scared, but curiosity, that means you're willing to carry the fear to find something out.
Right. So she pushes the door open, and inside, it's exactly what you'd expect initially. Thick dust, silence that feels loud, you know?
Right.
And immediately that fear response kicks in hard, heart racing, footsteps echoing.
She's primed for the monster.
Totally. She's expecting like claws and fangs, the classic horror movie jump scare. That's what her body is dressed for.
The expectation is running the show at that point. Her physical system is reacting to the idea of the monster, which can be even more powerful than the real thing sometimes.
There's no monster. She moves through the dark, dusty rooms, deeper into the house, and what does she find?
Not a ghoul, but a mirror.
Yeah, a cracked, old, dusty mirror. And she looks into it and sees herself, her own reflection. Wide-eyed, yeah, trembling a bit, definitely scared, but also completely alive, whole.
And that's the revelation, the insight she has right there.
Yeah.
The source says she eventually starts to laugh, realizing
that the fear itself was the monster.
Exactly. The haunted thing waiting behind the door was her own internal reaction, her own potential to panic. She'd walk through that feeling, face the intensity of her own physical response, and come out the other side. She saw she could hold it.
So the journey wasn't about defeating something external. It was about encountering herself under pressure, discovering that she could be scared and courageous at the same time. Which explains the laughter, that relief.
It's a huge realization. The intensity didn't break her. And this leads us right into this idea of like the paradox of playful fear. Why do we enjoy this stuff? Why go back for more?
Yeah. If you know what's coming in the movie, why watch it again? If you know the haunted house route, why queue up?
It's like kids playing hide and seek, isn't it? That mix of genuine momentary terror, they're gonna find me, followed by shrieks of delight. The source suggests we return because we're not trying to master the external thing.
We're mastering ourselves.
Our internal response to it. Yeah. Think about it. People rewatch horror films or go back to haunted attractions. The monsters don't change. The scares are often the same. What changes is us.
How so?
We learn subtly to manage that surge. We learn to ride the wave of panic, as the source puts it. We're practicing emotional regulation, really.
So it's not just entertainment. It's like psychological practice. Training wheels for fear.
In a way, yes. We're learning to separate the physical sensation of panic, the racing heart, the sweating palms from the cognitive belief that we're doomed.
Great. Explain that more. Like the first time in a haunted house.
First time, maybe you scream, shut your eyes, freeze up, right? Total overwhelm. But maybe the fifth time or the tenth time, you still feel the jolt, the adrenaline still there.
But you handle it differently.
Yeah. Maybe you learn to keep your eyes open. You notice, okay, heart's pounding, palms are sweaty, but hey, I'm still walking forward. This feeling is intense, but it's not actually stopping me. You observe it instead of being completely swamped by it.
That reframing feels huge.
Yeah.
Because life throws real fear at us, doesn't it? The stuff we don't choose.
Absolutely. A scary diagnosis, a betrayal, a sudden loss. And here's the kicker. Your nervous system doesn't really send out a different chemical signal for a real disaster versus a fake ghost jumping out.
The physical feeling is the same.
The biological surge, the stress hormones, the physical reactions, it's basically identical. And this is why practicing with chosen fear can be so valuable. It's rehearsal.
Rehearsal for what, exactly?
By experiencing these small, contained surges of fear physiology repeatedly in a safe space, we teach our bodies and our minds that this intense physical state is survivable. That feeling intensely scared doesn't automatically mean catastrophe is imminent.
It teaches the difference between feeling bad and something being bad.
Precisely. It helps distinguish intensity from actual immediate danger. Think about waiting for important, maybe scary news, like medical test results.
Okay, yeah, that feeling is awful, stomach churning.
Right, your body's producing those same stress chemicals as if you were in that haunted house. Now, someone who hasn't practiced fear might feel that physical panic and immediately leap to the worst conclusion. I feel this terrible, therefore the news must be terrible. The feeling equals the reality.
They trust the panic signal completely.
Whereas someone who's familiar with riding that wave of chosen fear might recognize, okay, this churning stomach, this racing heart, this is my body's stress response. I know this feeling. I've felt this surge before on that roller coaster or watching that movie. It feels overwhelming, but I know the feeling itself doesn't dictate the outcome. I can feel this and still function.
It gives you a bit of distance. You can observe the feeling without letting it totally run the show.
Exactly. It's cognitive reframing, learn through, essentially play.
That really does flip the script on fear. Makes it less of an enemy, maybe more of a challenging teacher.
That's a great way to put it. And the big takeaway here seems to be that always aiming for maximum comfort, zero risk, zero fear. While it sounds nice, it might actually leave us less equipped for life's inevitable bumps.
Because bumps will happen.
They will. And chosen fear reminds us that being fully alive isn't just about safety. It's also about thrill, surprise, mystery. And knowing we have the capacity to face the unknown, even when it feels scary.
Sometimes the fear isn't a stop sign, but maybe a you are here marker on an interesting path.
Yeah, maybe it signals you've just entered a part of the story that really matters, the point of highest engagement, perhaps.
So wrapping up this deep dive, this central idea from The Church of Tinkerbell feels really potent. Chosen fear as a gift we give ourselves.
Mm-hmm. A playful teacher.
Yeah, one we invite in. And by doing that, we get some say in whether fear, which, let's face it, always has sharp edges, gets to paralyze us, or whether it just kind of grins at us in the dark.
And maybe we can learn to grin back knowing we can handle the intensity.
Definitely. And the source offers a really practical way to think about this. It suggests reflecting on a time you chose fear. Maybe it was a ride, a spooky story, performing on stage, whatever it was for you.
Remember those physical sensations, the heart hammering, the goosebumps.
Yeah. And then ask yourself, what did that moment teach me about myself? Did you find a bit of courage you didn't know was there? Did you feel sheer joy in the relief afterwards? Did you learn you could keep going even while shaking?
Just noticing that you survived the surge, that the intensity passed. That's powerful. And interestingly, the source mentioned their next piece explores the comfort of candlelight.
Ooh, okay. So if chosen fear is about dancing with the shadows.
Right, confirming our resilience in the dark. Maybe candlelight is about the other side, the conscious choice to seek out safety, warmth, connection, wonder. The small, steady flames that guide us after we've faced the dark. It implies we need both, doesn't it? The dance with fear and the return to warmth.
That's a beautiful thought to hold on to. We definitely need both. Something to ponder as the nights draw in. We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive. Thanks for going on this little adventure with me today.
Anytime.
And listener, keep sprinkling that fairy dust, all right? We'll see you next time.